From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Last week, in the skies near busy Newark Airport, two airline pilots thought they saw a drone. They reported it to air traffic control, and that briefly led to a disruption at Newark. Now, that disruption wasn't as bad as what happened last month at London's Gatwick Airport, where drone sightings shut down the critical airport for days. Fortunately, nobody was hurt, but no perpetrators have been found yet, and there will be more drones in civilian airspace. So are airports, the FAA, ready to handle them? This hour on Point, drones, safety, and civilian airspace. And you can join us. Are there any pilots out there who have a story to share with us today? Have you seen anyone flying a drone near an airport? Or maybe are you a drone enthusiast? What are the real security and safety concerns around drones, and how can they best be managed in civilian airspace? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me first today from Washington is Alan Levin. He covers aviation and drones for Bloomberg News, and we've got a link to his terrific reporting on this at onpointradio.org. Alan, welcome to the program.
Hi, glad to be here.
Well, first of all, I just want to listen to a couple of pieces of tape around the Newark incident from last week. Last Tuesday, the airport stopped flights for an hour after two planes reported seeing drones. So first of all, here's CBS's Chris Van Cleave describing the incident a couple of hours later.
One of the nation's busiest airports, Newark Liberty International, stopped flights late this afternoon when drones were spotted nearby. One pilot said one drone was only 20 to 30 feet from his plane.
Now, here's the pilot of Southwest Flight 476 alerting Newark Air Traffic Control of a drone that he saw hit near his plane last Tuesday. Not 20 to 30 feet, a little further away than that. But listen to what he says. This is audio courtesy of ABC 7 News in New York.
Just be advised, there's something not final here. We thought maybe it was a drone. It was pretty close. I'd say within, a quarter mile at most off our right.
That's a pilot from Southwest Flight 476 last week. So, Alan, first of all, regarding the incident at Newark Airport or near Newark Airport, do we know exactly what happened? Was it a drone?
That's actually one of the big problems with these incidents is it's very difficult to verify pilot reports like this. These little devices don't show up on traditional radar. There are no existing tracking systems yet. The government's trying to build one, but it's still very much on the drawing board. And so you have to rely on witness reports and that sort of thing. In this particular case, I listen to those same air traffic tapes, and I would say, generally speaking, airline pilots are pretty good witnesses. They've seen it all. They tend they're not perfect by any stretch, but we have not just that Southwest pilot, but a few minutes later, a second crew, I believe it was a United flight, saw it and were very adamant. They didn't say, we think it's a drone. They said the drone was off our right wing, and that's the pilot that reported it was only 20 to 30 feet away.
Right. And although there has been some pushback, though. Some people are saying, could they be sure it was a drone? They're looking at something that could have been the size of a dinner plate, and they're still at the locations that these airplanes were at the time. They might have been still flying at some 250 miles an hour. And also, this particular object was supposedly sighted at, what, more than 3,000 feet in altitude, right? Are drones even allowed to fly that high?
Well, it's possible to get an exemption to allow you to fly that high. But generally speaking, no. They're supposed to stay about 400 feet or from the ground or below. And so if it was a drone, it was and I would add that you can't get permission to fly in the flight path of a major airport like that. So there's no way this was legal. But it is a confounding issue that there are literally thousands, 6,000 at last count, reports of mainly pilots seeing drones in the wrong place. But verifying whether these are actually true accounts has been very difficult, and you have really bitter arguments on both sides about just how bad a risk these really are.
Okay, so Alan, hang on here for just a second, because we want to get the view of a pilot or someone who's flown these exact aircraft before. So joining us now is Captain Larry Rooney. He's with us from Philadelphia today. He's president of the Coalition of Airline Pilots Associations. He was a pilot for American Airlines and United for 30 years. He's also former chairman of the Accident Investigation Committee and a member of the Safety Violations and Government Affairs Committees for the U.S. Airline Pilots Association. Captain Rooney, welcome to On Point.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for having me here today.
Hey, so first of all, tell me, I don't know if at any time during your 30 years, did you see a drone as you were flying your aircraft?
Well, I haven't actually seen a drone up and personal, but we've certainly seen, enough birds. Any kind of threats to our flight path, in that respect. Usually when we do see birds in flight, it's pretty easy to determine, that it's a bird as opposed to something else, only because of the shape and the way that it moves. Obviously a drone would be something that would be more square, that it would kind of hover in place,
mm-hmm.
where, a bird sighting would be something that pilots would have a lot of experience with. So to be able to determine whether or not it was a drone or it was, a bird, I think that's something that, depending on how close you were able to get to whatever this this projectile would be something that you would be able to determine from the cockpit of an airliner, even at the speeds that we do travel at. And quite frankly, when we are low level coming into land is when, where we're most exposed. And at that point, the airplane is a much reduced flight speed than it would be at altitude.
Right.
We'd be going 500 miles an hour.
Right. Well, so Captain Rooney, let me ask you, how great of a concern do pilots see drones as being? Are they getting more concerned year after year as we've got more and more drones potentially, flying in civilian airspace?
Oh, absolutely. As we continue to, add these devices into the national airspace system, I think at this point we're kind of living on luck. Air traffic control has been very, very proactive, and, if there's any potential sightings of these things, that there's been a lot of vectoring around these areas, or they actually, for safety's sake, they shut the airport down, as they've done over in the United Kingdom and in Newark recently. So it's a very, very big concern for us. The ability for, really a 12-year-old to go out and, buy one of these things, we're kind of working on the honor system with regard to the requirements for licensing to operate these devices. Anything less than 55 pounds just requires a registration online.
Mm-hmm.
We can see the damages that can be caused to an airliner, with an encounter in flight with with foreign object damage. The Miracle in the Hudson becomes a perfect example of that, where you've got, 8-pound projectiles, and in this case, a couple of geese were able to take down an airliner in flight. So when you multiply that by something that's no longer organic in nature, you've got something that's metal or plastic, it doesn't lend itself well. It would be equivalent to throwing a brick through a machine spinning at 10,000 revolutions per minute.
So, Captain Rooney, hang on here for just a second. Alan Levin, let me turn back to you, because you heard the captain there just talking about the dangers of an engine strike from a drone. But broadly speaking, there are other concerns as well, like drones being used by malevolent agents, malevolent actors.
That's right. In the Middle East, we've had several examples of terror groups using these small devices to, say, drop grenades on troops and detonate bombs and that sort of thing, not to mention spying on military positions, et cetera. And we actually have some cases here in the U.S. of alleged terrorists exploring the use of this. The head of the FBI testified last fall that this was a very big and growing concern by U.S. law enforcement and Homeland Security groups.
Hmm. So, Captain Rooney, it seems like there's a number of ways to be worried about the rise of the number of drones in U.S. civilian airspace. But we've also talked just briefly so far about some of the regulations around them. If I understand correctly, technically speaking, hasn't the FAA said that there can be no drones flown within, 5 miles of most U.S. airports?
That's correct. By the letter of the law, a tower-controlled airport, like you'd find in Boston or Newark, or some of the bigger airports that actually have an FAA staff control tower, The rule is 5 nautical miles from the center of the airport up to an altitude of actually anything within that circle requires notification to the tower before there's any type of flight. And the drones, you know, by design are not supposed to be flown above 400 feet. But yet, you know, we're encountering these potential drone sightings at altitudes well above that. And there is no requirement for licensing for the operator, the pilot, unless that device exceeds 55 pounds. And as I said previously, you know, an 8-pound bird can do tremendous damage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the question that begs to be answered is, what can a 40-pound drone do to that same engine?
Well, and so what would the airline pilots associations like? I mean, what kind of additional regulations do they think would be effective to keep the skies safe?
Well, certainly more oversight, you know, with regard to allowing these things to be flown in the first place. Better education for the operators would be another, you know, huge step in the right direction. But, you know, this is all new technology, and we need to be proactive with it versus, you know, continuing to let this thing proliferate where we just keep adding more and more and more potential threats to the national airspace system in the, you know, in the with the potential of a midair with one of these devices.
Well, Captain Larry Rooney, president of the Coalition of Airline Pilots Association, he flew for American and United for 30 years, speaking to us today from Philadelphia. Captain Rooney, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome, and it's American Airlines this morning, but thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I made a mistake there. Sorry. It actually says American right here on my notes. My apologies. American Airlines.
American today. Thank you very much.
Thank
you. No more than I do.
Thanks so much, Captain Rooney. Well, we are talking about drones and the increasing numbers of them in U.S. civilian airspace and even near airports, and what needs to be done about it to keep airlines and airline passengers and airports safe, but also allow, you know, the growing number of ranks of drones and drone enthusiasts to have their say as well. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about drones and civilian airspace. Last week, there was a disruption for a short time at Newark Airport in New Jersey when two pilots said they saw a drone flying nearby. And of course, last month, at London's Gatwick Airport, that airport was shut down for a couple of days due to drone sightings. It cost tens of millions of dollars, disrupted more than 100,000 travelers trying to get through Gatwick. Here's a passenger speaking to the British online news service On Demand News after this passenger's flight got suspended at Gatwick last month.
We're sitting on the airplane nearly 6 hours, and they tell us we're going to fly as soon as possible, but they cancel it. After that, they say to us, you have to get out from the airplane. And we get out, all the families, some of them, they going back to London, and we stay here, we sleep on the floor.
That's one of the more than 100,000 travelers whose flights were disrupted at Gatwick Airport in London last month following a drone sighting. So we want to hear from you. How is it that we balance the needs, the safety needs, the security needs around airports as we have more and more drone enthusiasts flying their little devices every day? What regulations do we need? Perhaps are there technological fixes? And also, is there a national security concern as well? I'm joined today by Alan Levin. He covers aviation and drones for Bloomberg News. And Alan, let me just ask you quickly. You heard what Captain Rooney told us before the break about, he says we need more oversight, better education for operators, and need to be more proactive. Now, on that proactive front, what would being more proactive look like when it comes to drone safety around airports?
The federal government, in this case, the Federal Aviation Administration, is wrestling with this, has been for the past few years. The short answer is nobody quite knows at this point. But, you know, they've done all sorts of things to try to push industry to include notes when you buy the drones, telling people where to fly it and where not to fly it. That has, I think it helps with some people, but clearly not everybody. Congress passed a law a couple months back that requires first of all, it brings more oversight to the drone world. The Congress had written a fairly clumsy law about 5 or 6 years ago, which did not specifically give FAA control over civilian hobbyist drone operators. But now the agency does and whatnot. But there's a big debate about, you know, do you go out and do enforcement cases for these people, most of whom are just sort of doing this out of ignorance or not. So far, the agency has had a couple of big high-profile enforcement cases, but for the most part, they're not. And then there's a much bigger effort underway, spurred by law enforcement, to require every drone in the country to put out a radio beacon that identifies that drone, its operator, and tells law enforcement or anybody else where it is.
So that effort's underway, but that's not fully integrated technology. That's something that law enforcement would like to have happen.
Correct, they're supposedly on schedule to release a proposed rule to require that in May. These things take a year, sometimes longer if they're controversial, to put to finalize. So we're looking at 2020 at the earliest before that can be put in place.
So, Alan, let me ask you frankly. I mean, you've been thinking about both aviation and drones, these worlds for a long time. Honestly, do you feel like there's a sense of urgency around this or not?
I definitely think there's a sense of urgency. The problem is it's not entirely clear how to fix it. And, and you have this industry that is growing by leaps and bounds. You have some of the, powerful or at least rapidly growing tech companies in the world, namely Amazon and Google, that are trying to do drone deliveries, among other things, but they're also used for dozens, hundreds of commercial uses. And so there's this tremendous push to sort of allow that to happen. They don't want to squash that, what could be the equivalent of the next personal computer in terms of its impact on the economy. There's a great debate going on, mostly behind, out of the news media, but about how they can reasonably sort of deal with this without squashing the industry.
Okay. Well, Alan, hang on here for just a second. So let's talk to someone who knows this industry very well. Joining us now from New York is Adam Lisberg. He's a spokesman for the drone manufacturer DJI. And DJI estimates that it makes 75% of the world's drones right now. Adam Lisberg, welcome to you.
Hi, Megan. Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you. So first of all, give me your honest assessment. Does DJI feel a sense of concern or have a concern that one day its drones may be involved, whether purposefully or inadvertently, in an engine strike on a commercial aircraft?
Look, we from the start have been very aware that when you suddenly have small flying objects in the air, it's going to create concerns and it's going to create challenges. We know that there have been real documented incidents. For example, when a drone hit an Army Black Hawk helicopter off of Staten Island about a year and a half ago. So while the potential threat exists, we do think that there's a lot of overblown reporting out there. For example, the incident over Newark Airport last week, we really don't think it happened. It's just highly unlikely that somebody hacked the hardware and software and then willingly broke the law by flying at 3,500 feet in very crowded airspace, and that it was correctly identified by two airplane pilots flying at 250 miles an hour. This is not a knock on the pilots, but somebody who's flying at dusk with just a split second to observe and try to identify something We think that, well, there have always been birds and balloons in the air, that long before drones existed, pilots were reporting UFOs or other strange objects.
Yeah, so point taken.
The concern is real, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to jump in here because point taken, because we acknowledge at the top of the show that there still is some debate about actually was seen in the skies over Newark. But let's look back at what happened at Gatwick. In London, those drones didn't need to fly high. They were seen as being as flying near the single runway that Gatwick has, and it shut down that airport for a couple of days. So, I
want to put in a note of caution there. Nobody has shown a confirmed picture of that drone. Nobody has seen all of the thousands of people who are inconvenienced there, all of the hundreds of airport workers and police and military looking for the drone. Nobody spotted it. Nobody's seen a bit of evidence for it. They arrested two people and then had to release them the next day because they realized they were wrong. And I don't mean to inconvenience to make light of the people who were inconvenienced at Gatwick or at Newark or at Heathrow, but in an atmosphere where everyone says they see a drone, but nobody can actually point to the drone, it makes it that much likely for the next time someone sees an animality in the air to immediately start to assume drone instead of bird or balloon. I mean, there have been collisions reported around the world where airplane pilots say, I hit a drone. And when they land and they look over the evidence, they realize it was actually a structural failure of the plane itself or a bird or a bat. So, the threat exists. And that's why, as I was starting to say, from DJI's perspective, as you said, we make most of the world's drones and we've recognized this as an issue. So one of the areas where we strongly agree with Captain Rooney is that education for pilots is a key component. That, coupled with the technology that we've built into our drones, such as geofencing, which alerts drone pilots so they can't get near an airport in the first place, such as our built-in altitude limits. We also have a system called Aeroscope that airports and police agencies can use to identify DJI drones anywhere near them so they could go find the operator if they need to talk to that person because of their concern about how the drone is operating.
Right.
So we also have, one of the things he mentioned is that the concern that anybody can just go out and buy and fly a drone. The FAA is going to require a mandatory quiz for all new drone pilots that, tests them on the simple online system to make it easy for people to get into the system to say, this is, here are some of the basic rules about where to fly, where not to fly, what to be cautious of. And we've already implemented a voluntary system like that on our drones in the U.S., the U.K., and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we recognize the threat is real. That's why we've proactively tried to come up with a lot of systems and a lot of technologies to ensure that this system, the drone technology remains as safe as the FAA wants it to be.
Well, so let me just jump in here for a second, Mr. Lisberg, because I'm very glad to hear you say that possible past misidentification does not mitigate the need for future vigilance to prevent a disaster. I'm very glad to hear you say that. But specifically, though, let me ask you, you heard Alan Levin say just a couple of minutes ago that, for example, in the United States, law enforcement is looking towards putting out a proposal that may eventually ask all drones to put out a beacon that would identify both itself and its operator. Would DJI welcome something like that?
Not only do we welcome it, we've already built a system that does that. Our Aeroscope system, every drone that we sell, it's communicating with the remote controller constantly. So the thing you hold in your hand to tell the drone which way to go and where to go, it's in constant radio communication with the drone. And we've encoded in that a special signal. So the drone is always saying, here's where I am, here's which way I'm going, my direction and speed and altitude. Here's the location of the pilot holding the controller, and here's my serial number. It broadcasts that signal, and any Aeroscope receiver within radio range will pick that up. We can just look at a map on a computer screen and see exactly where the drone is, where the operator is. I have seen this system. I've watched it used at there's a big balloon festival in Albuquerque, New Mexico every fall. And we had a system set up there because they want to make sure that when you've got 500 balloons and 100,000 people on the ground, they don't want a drone, flying above folks there. So I sat in the control tower next to the operator of this with an Albuquerque cop on one side and an FAA official on the other. Whenever someone would turn their drone on for miles around, we'd hear a beeping noise. We'd look on the screen. We could see where the drone is, where the operator is. We'd look on the map and say, okay, it looks like the operator. This looks like it's a parking lot of a hotel. Send a squad car over to this intersection. And they would find the guy and say, what are you doing? Bring that drone back. And in certain cases, they could initiate enforcement actions.
All right.
So that the FAA is looking how to mandate a system like that there's a lot of technical details, but we are all for it, and we're already doing it.
So, Adam Lisberg, one last question before I have to let you go here.
Sure.
Are you worried about terrorists using your drones?
Yes, and just as much as anyone who makes like, cell phones for a living or computers for a living, because pickup trucks, because terrorists, are renowned for being able to use any kind of device in that way. And, you know, you can see examples of people modifying drones in that way. We absolutely abhor that kind of activity, and we've taken steps to try to prevent activity like that. But unfortunately, like any other technology, if somebody is a really determined adversary, that's not something that they're going to try to defeat any systems that we put in to stop them. We cooperate with law enforcement and national security investigations all around the world. Someone presents us with a warrant or a subpoena, et cetera, to go after it. But, it gets to the point where it is a matter for counterterrorism officials, not just people who make products.
Well, Adam Lisberg is spokesman for the drone manufacturer DJI. They may make up to 75% of the world's drones right now. Adam Lisberg, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate this.
Alan Levin, let me turn back to you. What are some of your thoughts from what you heard Adam Lisberg say?
The one thing I'd like to note is that their system works great as far as it goes. I actually have spoken to people who've used it, an airport operator in California who raves about it. But there's a great deal of controversy over which system the government should mandate. And not everybody agrees that this is the one. A couple of issues. One is it only works within the radio, the range of the operator, so maybe a mile or two or three, depending on line of sight, and it for now anyway only works, with DJI drones. So if somebody has built their own drone or has bought one from another manufacturer, it's not going to show up on their system. Uh-huh. Now it's possible to expand the system to use signals from other drones, but for the moment, it does not. And the big companies like Amazon and Google, they want to create a system that's more like the air traffic system of today, where their drones will talk to a cellular network. That information will be transmitted all around. So in other words, you could see drones over the hill 10 miles away or farther. And they say that's a more foolproof method. Now, it likely will cost a little more, but there's a very powerful debate going on behind the scenes over which technology should win out at the end.
Well, let's bring another voice into this conversation. John Holinsky joins us now. He's former deputy administrator at the TSA, now a consultant for the International Civil Aviation Organization, or the ICAO. John Holinsky, welcome to you.
Hello, Meghna.
It's great to have you, John. And just let me first get you. You heard Alan, you heard Adam Lisberg, and you heard Captain Rooney a little earlier in the show. I just wonder what your take is on the current safety concern or safety threat that drones may pose in civilian airspace.
Well, I think we've done a lot of talking about the use by hobbyists of what I would consider nuisance drones that can shut down an airport, but there may not be a malicious intent there. But I think you have to look at it from a perspective of you have a low-end threat like this from a hobbyist that gets involved and puts it in an airspace that may shut it down. But I think you have to look at the entire extreme end. In the middle, you have people that are going to be involved in some type of, let's say, criminal activity. What do I mean by that? With the drones you have today, it's very easy to transport some type of device or contraband into a secure space like an airport. If you think of airports, all those fences, all that screening, and a drone, a small drone, being able to put in some kind of contraband, be it drugs, a weapon, explosives, in there to somebody inside the airport. Or even some of the initial reports out of Gatwick was that it might have been an extortion attempt to shut down the airport for money. So you have a low-end hobbyist nuisance threat, a criminal threat in the middle, and then I think a very valid terrorism threat. And let's look at it this way. An IED, one of the most effective weapons a terrorist can use today, is an improvised explosive device. Being able to improvise, and I know I heard the restrictions from Adam on his particular drones, but there is a cottage industry out there that you can add and take away all different types of parts and technology from drones and modify it. So in effect, what you're doing is weaponize, a terrorist could weaponize the drone itself. So I think you have to look at it from the entire spectrum. And that's how you approach it from a security standpoint.
Well, and the truth is we're living in an age where everything is hackable, right? So we're going to talk more about these bigger security concerns when we come back. John Helinski, stand by. Alan Levin, hang in there with us. We're talking about drones and the increasing numbers of them in U.S. civilian airspace and how to manage that, whether we need more regulation, maybe more counter-drone technology, and how to do that while also not dampening the enthusiasm of law-abiding drone pilots. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about drones and civilian airspace and whether or not they constitute a growing safety and security threat. We've got lots of comments coming in here. Evan says on our website, onpointradio.org, Evan's saying, I think broad overarching regulation requiring registration of all drones unfairly punishes responsible operators since the consumer-grade drones causing the problems are just one segment of the hobby. On the other hand, back in 2017, FBI Director Christopher Wray testified to the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee about threats to the United States, and he also talked about drones.
I think we do know that terrorist organizations have an interest in using drones. We've seen that overseas already with some growing frequency, and I think the expectation is it's coming here imminently. I think they are relatively easy to acquire, relatively easy to operate, and quite difficult to disrupt and monitor.
That's Christopher Wray back in 2017. John Helinski, let me turn back to you here because I'm curious. There are counter-drone technologies, are there not, that airports can install? And if so, what are they and are they effective?
So there's a number of technologies that are out there today, and it seems that it's an industry that's really growing in response to, you know, this perceived or real threat that drones could pose. And they vary from, jamming the device. First off, on the technology, remember, first you have to detect the drone, which particularly for the small ones, and as people have pointed out, were there really drones in these incidents? You have to detect it, and then you have to neutralize it or mitigate it in some way. So there's two different types of technology, and you have a lot of competition to see which is the best technology out there. But also you have to look at the effect of those technologies that might have on communication system, on the aircraft in those particular areas around airports, and other things like that. So I think technology is going to get better. It needs to grow. There's a lot of experimentation that needs to be done with it and a lot of looking at results. I know that the Department of Homeland Security, its Science and Technology Division, is looking at and funding some technologies in this particular area. And there's a lot out there. But I think that it needs to be refined more. Quite frankly, I'm more concerned with the fact that, great, you have these technologies going. You actually have a whole lot of legislation out there. And you have multiple. In the U.S., you have multiple departments, Homeland Security, Justice, Treasury. You have the FCC. You even have the Department of Interior that have rules and regulations about drones. You have states and local authorities. There's great. Everybody has legislation. Everybody has policies. The biggest concern I have, and you could see it with the incident in Newark or at Gatwick, is that has not trickled down. There is no really solid security policy out there that I can see at a U.S. airport to handle and mitigate this kind of threat. And that's what causes shutdowns, and that's what could cause further problems down the road. All of this stuff has to trickle down, and it has to be put in use. In other words, clarify who does what and practice your response.
So Alan Levin, jump in here. It's quite bracing to hear John Holinsky say there's no solid plan. What's your response to that?
It's absolutely true. We did a story just a couple weeks ago after the Gatwick incident that highlighted a letter that the Federal Aviation Administration sent to all U.S. airports. And basically they said, we've tested these devices for detecting drones, et cetera. They don't work very well. We urge you not to get them until we can do more research. And the problem is, so they use radars. Some will try to hone in on the sound signature of the buzzing of the drone. They can monitor the radio frequencies, and they can use video. But none of them work very well. Now, I have talked to people who were involved in the tests, and they say that there's promise that they can, you know, they're hopeful that they can adapt and do a better job of monitoring them. But it's very manpower intensive because you get a lot of false positives every time a bird or a, you know, a Mylar balloon or something flies by. It's going to the radars are going to think it's the drone. So you have a lot of people paying attention to it. It's incredibly expensive. You can't just do it right at the airfield. You know, you have to do it for miles around.
Right.
And so the short answer is it's there's no clear way out of this in the short run.
All right. Well, we've had some callers who've been patiently waiting for a while, so let's roll through a bunch of them. Let's start with James, who's calling from Richmond, Virginia. James, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. I'm a private pilot, have been since 2001. I'm also a 107 certificate holder, which means I have the ability to operate commercial drones. And as a private pilot and as a user of drones, I believe that there is a sincere and elevated risk of potential impact, and it really needs to be raised as a concern. I know there are quite a few companies out there that are doing quite a bit, as previously discussed, but there are other manufacturers that may not be up to that level. And then also you have that homemade threat. Mm-hmm. When you're in the air, you have an heightened or you have definitely heightened responsibility. As a pilot, I know this. I follow the exact same rules of the road while I'm in the air as an airline pilot. With these drones, there's that separation there between you being on the ground and having a unmanned flying vehicle flying up there.
Right.
And one more point, as a private pilot, we fly a lot lower to the ground in kind of those same areas where these drones are hovering around. So, you know, if it's a commercial airliner taking off or if there's a private pilot in the area, it's just a matter of time where we're going to connect with these devices. So I just I'm a little worried now flying my family and knowing that those are out there with, you know, that technology kind of lacking behind.
Right. So, well, James, I'm going to just jump in here and thank you for your call, because bringing both the perspective of a licensed pilot and a drone operator to the table here. James, thank you. Let's go to Berta, who's calling from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Berta, you're on the air.
Thank you so much. And it's actually Britta with an I, but no problem. No, it's okay. I'm actually a licensed drone pilot as well, and my comment is just basically that I think there should be some type of public license that we have. You know, going through all that testing, you learn so many rules and regulations that you wouldn't know otherwise, and that these, you know, public drone operators, they just aren't aware of. And after I got my license, I see it all the time, people breaking the rules. And it's not just a danger to the pilots, it's also a danger to automobiles. And so I think that there needs to be some type of public license that takes place, or, you know, the public shouldn't be flying them, because the risk is just, it's very heightened, as the previous caller said. Right.
Britta, let me just ask you, so you said you got a drone pilot's license. What was that process like? Mm-hmm. Was that licensing process rigorous enough, in your opinion?
I absolutely think so. It definitely taught me all of the ins and outs that, you know, are necessary, of, you know, from weather to sectional charts to NOTAMs, all of these different things that, like I said, the public is not aware of that's going on in. So yeah, it's a little bit of a process of studying and, you know, taking that test. But it's so important, and I appreciate it a lot. And so that's why I really feel like having some type of public test, maybe it's not as rigorous, but just some type of test that they have to take so that they know, you know, the risk that's involved in flying the drone.
Yeah. Well, Britta, thank you so much for your call, and my apologies for messing up your name, but I very much appreciate you calling in. Alan Levin, let me turn back to you here. I suppose there's a basic question that we ought to ask here. And what are the current licensing requirements? I mean, who has to get a license to operate a drone and who doesn't? Because earlier in the hour, you know, we heard about, you know, a 12-year-old could buy a drone off the shelf and fly it.
So that's a very good question. What Britta and the previous caller were talking about is they have licenses to fly commercially. It's Part 107, which the earlier caller mentioned. It requires a knowledge test that's fairly extensive. And these commercial operators represent maybe about 1 in 10 of all of the drone operators in the country, a little over 100,000, I believe, at last count, maybe up to 200 now. But there are about a million, close to a million other people who are non-commercial or hobby operators. All they essentially have to do at the moment is pay $5 and they get a license to own and operate multiple drones. But I would point out, as Adam mentioned earlier in the show, the FAA is moving toward at least some sort of a simple knowledge test for all drone operators. Congress, I think, as a result of these growing incidents, decided that it would make sense to have at least some kind of simple test for all drone operators.
Okay.
And so that's coming. No, we don't have a time frame on that, but.
So, John Holinsky, I mean, how far would that go to quelling the concern about drones around airports?
So I think it's a good thing. You know, the registration of some type of people with drones, I think that's a very good thing, because you're actually setting a framework for the rules, the do's and the don'ts. And just to put it in perspective, generally, from a security standpoint, when you look at something like this, it's always less than the 1% who get involved in something bad or something criminal or something from a terrorism standpoint. But when you're talking about the potential for a couple million people, that's a lot of potential problems. One point I did want to make, too, is on this, you have to look not just at what we're doing today, because the drones today are still very dependent on direct line of sight in some cases and things like that. But as technology, and it moves so fast, we also have to be looking at it from the perspective of what happens when you get drone technology that uses and learns artificial intelligence or can fly without being direct line of sight, and it's capable today. I think from the perspective of the government and from a security perspective, you also have to start looking at that, because you don't want to be accused, as government officials typically are, that, well, you're fighting the last battle and not the next one. How come you didn't predict this? I think we have to worry about what's going to be the drone situation in 5 years and how autonomous are they going to be and what is the impact from security at that standpoint. I don't think those questions are even being looked at.
Well, you know, so earlier in the program, Adam Lisberg, who was the spokesman for DJI, and they make about 75% of the world's drones, he suggested that the best way to look at this regarding security and specifically malevolent actors using drones is through the lens of, look, these are people who may use any kind of technology for terrorism. He was talking about you have to see it in the same way as we see trucks now. I mean, is that the framework that we need to be looking at regarding how to regulate around drones in the future, or how to keep airspace and people safe?
So let's look at it from that perspective. So I would tell you the two, and let me use the example of terrorist groups. The two terrorist groups that have been predominant in aviation security over the past decade is Al-Qaeda and ISIS. ISIS is a group that radicalizes people, and they use very simple things to conduct attacks, trucks, knives, guns, things like that. On the other side, Al-Qaeda has been much more advanced and technically oriented. I think we have to worry about both groups. A small drone with a small explosive device that actually could be flown into an engine, let's say an ISIS model, someone that picks it up over the weekend and tries to do it, you have to be concerned about that. But more importantly, if you can improvise, and certainly the groups like Al-Qaeda have the technology and the advancement and the understanding about how to take that drone and get rid of any of those restrictions or prohibited type of security elements that are built into the drone from the manufacturer and weaponize it just like they did with IEDs. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you really have to be concerned about for the future, looking at the extreme. Now, granted, that is going to be the extreme. But if you don't plan for it and you don't talk about it, then shame on you.
Well, let's get one last call in here. Eric is calling from Johnson City, Tennessee. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My concern really is with the – it's sort of overblown to where this terrorist threat – I mean, right, they could do anything. If it's like that, you could regulate the drone and say, you know, don't fly over 30 feet because then you could bring drugs over this fake border wall. But the overregulation, I feel like, where does it end mm-hmm. in this? And I think it should be more on the airlines' concern to be able to take the drones out, because a drone 250 yards away, I don't know if that's necessarily harmful. And to the user, like I would use it and I would try to get it on the commercial side, is there's all this stuff you have to go through and they're really expensive and all these regulations, when it's just really common sense, like don't fly your airplane where the planes are taking off.
Don't fly a drone, yeah.
For that one thing.
Yeah. Well, Eric, thank you for your call. Alan Levin, we've got about a minute and a half left here. I mean, I think Eric's basically saying, look, is this an overblown concern, as we may be overblown in all our concerns about technology?
Listen, I get calls every day from people on different sides of this. There's no agreement. But the one thing I would say is that they've made tremendous effort to educate people for the last 5 years. And I think it's reasonable to say it's not working. And so people are searching for harder ways to ensure that people fly in the right place and follow the rules. And how that is done is still to be determined. But, I read hundreds and hundreds of these reports. Some of them may be in error, but at least some of them are true. And actually, there's one little point that I wanted to make about the safety issue, and that is they have done tests on what would happen if a drone hit an airliner. And it's somewhat optimistic. It's not likely to bring one down, at least these small ones that DJI makes.
Hmm. Well, this hour we've talked about congressional oversight, perhaps drone-based technology to beacon to transmit the signal or the operator name from every drone. We've talked about counter-drone technologies on the ground, but it sounds like the sweet spot is somewhere with all of those factors in as we think about drones and the future and safety and security in civilian airspace. So Alan Levin, from covering aviation and drones for Bloomberg News, thank you so much for joining us. And John Holinsky, former deputy administrator at the TSA and now with the International Civil Aviation Organization as well. Thank you both for a really terrific hour. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.